so that by 12 we are actually through with our meeting. Now, without much ado, I'll call upon the DG to give it to everybody who received the presentation, I think, last week. And we are going to go through that presentation. I remember that I'm going to ask the DG to take us through the presentation. And we will take it from there. Whatever.
Thank you very much.
Not sure we are on the list.
Thank you, Chairperson, for that welcome, and I think from our side we want to return the compliments and obviously thanks for the new year. It's always difficult for education. I think we meet other colleagues in other departments around this time and they say compliments of the season, and we sort of scratch our heads and say, well, you know, it's hardly a new year in education. Our year starts on the 9th of December, so by this time we've been around, but it's nice to be back here and meeting with this committee, and we really do welcome this opportunity to present to you the annual report. It is, I think, as you noted, Chair, a pity, of course, that it's coming this late, but I'm sure there's still substantive items that we should discuss and can be guided on, but let me just offer, I'm sure, our parliamentary liaison officer, Mr. Place to Libby, down at the end there, to liaise with the committee secretary, that we do try and ensure that in the coming year we get in that much sooner. We appreciate the wisdom and advice of this committee, and if it's too poke back though, then obviously we lose the value of that. So we will try and work on that. As you say, Chair, both the presentation has been circulated together with, I'm sure, last year you received the annual report. We've got a few spare copies of those don't have it. But that really is the substance of the discussion, and I'm sure you've engaged with that. So, Chair, we'll try and, as you say, be economical in the presentation, but pick out some of the key things, I think, that are important to highlight for the committee. And perhaps we start with the second slide that captures overall the bigger issue that our minister, since assuming office in 2004, has put on the table, that the government priorities are dealing with poverty, dealing with poverty through advanced skills development and human resource development, continuing improvement in quality in the system, issues of health and education, and of course our big goal, the target of developing all of our institutions, and these aren't just schools and universities, but the institutions like district offices, provincial offices, head offices, to make sure that they will work. So those are constantly on our agenda, and from those we then draw down the individual aspects for the different branches. In the department we have six branches overall, general education, further education and training, higher education are the three BAND branches we call them, not BANNED but BAND, and then the cross-cutting branches, that of policy promotion and development, that of system planning and monitoring that deals with all our financial planning issues, etc. And then our administrative branch, headed by our CFO, that deals with our internal administration of the department. So let me kick off with the bottom end of the system, but it shouldn't mean that it's the less important. I mean, many people will argue the general education, the foundation, is the most important area, and we give a lot of attention to it. And we start really at the lowest end of the system, the early childhood development elements. We started to systematize, I think, the provision of ECD, particularly in schools, in our grade R classes. We have these drawn from standards, the funding of grade R. These have subsequently been submitted to the Minister of Finance for concurrence. We're awaiting his feedback, but certainly if these are received, they were published earlier for comment, they will make a big difference in securing the funds for it. And of course, during the year under review, Cabinet approved what's known now as the National Integrated Plan on Early Childhood Development. This is for the 0 to 4 year olds, a joint program of ourselves, of health and of social development, trying to ensure that even our children from birth are provided with some forms of early childhood development as early as we can, and at age 5 they then move into grade R and then of course into the school system. So that program is being implemented, in fact some cases we'll come across more about the nature of the program. General education training also deals broadly with curriculum, the assessment issue, and the one major step we took, I think, during that year was around inclusive education, our learners with special needs. We've established these district-based support teams to work with schools around learners with special needs, particularly early identification of learners with special needs. If you pick these things up early, very often you can address them. So that's a large part of their part. And then we've developed these national guidelines for inclusive learning programs. Clearly these children have different learning needs or need adapted learning programs for them. Guidelines have been put out as well as guidelines for assessments. You can't always assess these learners in the same way. There might be spelling difficulties that you want to overcome. Whatever it might be, we've given guidelines around how to do that. So I think a focus there on ensuring these children are not disadvantaged in our school system an important difference. Other matters under curriculum and assessment, I think a major concern for many people has been that teachers are complaining about the administrative workload, particularly around the assessment that needs to be done. We've agreed it's been overdone in schools, to be honest, so we put out now a national protocol on assessment, which is really just trying to down-manage the amount of time that teachers spend on assessing. In the end, we said your job is to teach. Assessment is consequent to that, but some of them have been spending almost half their time at us on the assessment. That's wrong. The time should be spent on teaching. Importantly, we put out the guidelines on school uniform. They really only impacted, I think, in the beginning of this year, but I think you would have seen some of the positive comments that have been made around the simpler school uniform, the lowering cost, etc. around that, and hopefully is impacting in some way on access to school. The Hongkong department said something about we would entertain jeans and khakis if it meant more children seeing the inside of the classroom. Now that got misunderstood, that we were promoting jeans and khakis, and that wasn't the point. The point is getting children into class. Obviously, there should be a uniform. We encourage school uniforms, simple school uniforms, appropriate school uniforms, but in the end, the bottom line is if the child can't afford that uniform, there is no basis for excluding them. If they do happen to come in jeans and khakis because that's all they can afford, so be it, they come in. And that is the point to say. One of the biggest thrusts I think our minister has brought into this whole domain is the focus on reading and literacy. And we've got an ongoing campaign around reading development in that year 2005-06. Some 5,200 primary schools were provided with sets of storybooks, reading books for the foundation phase. I'm happy to say it hasn't ended there. We'll continue this year. We can report later. But that's an ongoing strategy that we've been trying to ensure that schools have these reading books in the first instance. We've also given some of the secondary schools, grade 9 classes, sets of the average of 100 best books, just so that they can be part, I think, of finding in the country and the continent. And then we've established an LPSM forum, which is what all the stakeholders, your publishers, your booksellers, your provinces, etc., trying to look at this issue of LPSM. Let me say I'm still not comfortable that we're getting full value for money on LCSM that we buy in this country, and perhaps at some future stage we want to come and talk to you a little bit more about how we see that unfold. Further work of the General Education Training Branch is the Institutional Human Resource Development. Very exciting, the Education Management Policy Framework that was finalised, and of course now a standard for principles. This has turned now into an ACE, an Advanced Certificate in Education for School Leadership, that has been in the media also recently, I think very well received. Just became here, the message is not that principals are inadequate and not doing their jobs. It's simply saying you were trained as a teacher and now you're a manager. It's a different job, you need different training. It's not applying criticism of these principals or anything. It's simply saying, different job, you need training, let's assist you. We've got some 700 bursaries we'll give out this year for principals, but interestingly, a number of other organizations are coming to us saying, can't we sponsor some principals as well? So really, the sooner we can get all 27,000 principals through this, I think would be very important. We'll continue on that. The school governing body elections were in fact conducted early in 2006, so those went on okay. the reports are there. Institutional human resource development, you know, every year we publish some 2 million leaflets on the rights and responsibilities of parents, of learners, of public schools. We publish these in all 11 languages. We go through government, through post office, through police stations, taxi rank, wherever we can to get these out. But still somehow, it's not well understood. The issue of school admissions, of school fees, every year there's a storm. It's getting less and less, so maybe there's over time some impact. But again, we appeal, I think, to everyone to play their part in trying to ensure people understand what these rights are, what these responsibilities are in this regard. We put out a handbook for district management, so that's an ongoing program improving the quality of management at the district level. And the DEMIS tool, that's your district education management information system, information about each and every district. That was piloted during the year under review. Since then, we've improved it, and we are building upon that pilot. So, finally, on general education and training, the upgrading of our human resources. We've managed to train 1,200 provincial officials in regard to the national curriculum statement, and some 40,000 grade 7 teachers were trained that year around the curriculum, which was to be implemented in 2006. This year, of course, we're implementing it in grade 8 and 9, but that was the program, the 600-odd workshops that we held. Very nicely also, we managed to sponsor 278 teachers in an advanced certificate in either math, science, or technology. So trying to meet the needs of the system in those areas. We gave bursaries for them to do that. And we also sponsored 2,500 plus teachers with the National Professional Diploma. These would be underqualified teachers who have now become fully qualified REQD 13, good to have them on board as well. And finally, on the quality promotion side, one that does tolerate concern, in the year under review, we did a grade 6 systemic evaluation that's testing some 35,000 grade 6 learners across the country. We do it around literacy and numeracy and life skills. We have published that report subsequently, and I think it's become public knowledge that the performance of our grade 6 learning is still nowhere near where we would like it to be. But the useful thing is, based on this evaluation we did, we've managed to now develop teacher guides, you'll see on the bottom bullet, that says, your class did not do well in the following areas, these are the things we think you could give attention to, and we give some suggestions and guidance for each and every group of teachers there around where their strengths were, where their weaknesses were, and how they might remediate some of these. So it's not just an assessment tool, it's an assessment, a feedback, a quality promotion, and obviously we'll go back in 3 years time again and retest them and see if they've improved in any way, but that's useful data. Further education and training in 2005-06 was really just on the cusp. Since then, I think it's become one of the biggest programs of government, certainly. But in the schools, we've implemented grade 10 as the national curriculum statement in that area. The Dinner Lady program, by that stage, it was some 400 Dinner Lady schools. I think it's grown a little bit now to over 500, but that was running at that stage in the Dinner Lady schools. And part of addressing this LTSM problem I referred to earlier is we started developing a national catalogue. There was too much mess with every province having its own catalogue or publishers not quite knowing where. So what we did during that year was develop a grade 11 technical catalogue, which now we said is applicable. Schools can choose the books, but they must be from the national catalogue. We've done that again now for grade 12 for next year to make sure that children are at least getting decent textbooks. Sad to say, there is still some rubbish out there. There is still some outdated, inappropriate material. We've had to eliminate that in the national catalogue. And over time, I think that should contribute to improved quality. One of the tasks of this branch, of course, is to reflect on the matric exams, and particularly those schools that in areas that haven't done well. So we reflect firstly on the matric results, and I think you will see those from that year. We do have an improved schools award ceremony held every year in March. I hope, Chairperson, you will at least get an invite for the coming one. I don't know if you're there yet. If not, we will check on that. But that starts to at least reward the top performing schools, which is nice. But of course, we also have to continue to work with those schools that underperform, and that's an ongoing campaign that we do have around that. The exciting development, obviously, is in the FET colleges. We have now finalized the National Certificate Vocational and different programs for that. There are 52 programs all in all that have been developed in 13 key areas of construction, of engineering, of business, of ICT, of hospitality, and we've really developed together with the industry players in each of these sectors, I think, very good, very relevant, high quality programs for the FET colleges. Treasury was very generous in giving us the money for the recapitalization of the FET colleges. The reports are that most of these colleges are absorbing the funds, are using these funds to rebuild workshops, re-equip workshops, that kind of thing. But something that perhaps people didn't see, the last word there, is that included in the recap were the human resources in the colleges as well. And we have given every lecturer in an FET college a grant of 10,000 rand to say, go and develop yourself in your skills. If you're teaching engineering, go and make sure that you're teaching the latest engineering, latest equipment, latest technology, and not something that will fit more than 50. Yeah? So that's a very exciting program we can look at. The third band is that of higher education, and the first half has been the consolidation of the whole restructuring process. In June 2005, that process was formally completed. Walter Sisulu University was the last to come in place, and that got established during 2005. We have councils in place. We had interim councils initially. We now have substantive councils in place in all these higher education institutions. Most of them have got new vice-chancellors appointed. Some very exciting individuals, I think, there. And largely, the administrative and management policies of mergers are underway. What we really need to do now is to start looking at new institutional cultures of both the organizations that have merged, as well, of course, as those who haven't merged. They are not outside of the transformation project. Consolidation going on. You'll see there we gave some 400 million to support these merger costs. Some 36 million we gave to Tshwane University for student residences, it's a big concern, 30 million to Fort Hare, 30 million to Northwest. At the moment we're certainly continuing with other universities as they produce their plan. So we want to make sure it's a vibrant and well it was a sector. And in terms of the entry requirements for higher education, this is ongoing. You know, of course, we will have the new matricas, as it were, in 2008. The higher education sector is very excited about this new matric. It does away with the old 5-8 standards, all sorts of other things. And I think you will see a lot of learners now, who might have been students previously, being able to get into higher education programs based on this national student. Just a report on a conference that was held by higher education, looking at the status of African studies. It's part of the institutional and curriculum transformation that we need to drive here. These are not universities that are doing the same work as they might have done in the 60s. There's a new context, there's a new relationship with the continent that we need to build. We had wonderful attendance from really this country and elsewhere in Africa largely. And there was a working group established under and they are continuing to work with the institutions, particularly those who offer African studies, in trying to shape up a decent curriculum in that regard. And also just a report on European aid, European Union funded program, higher education aid program. HESA, Higher Education South Africa, actually runs the program. But we had very positive reports about changing attitudes and changing behaviours on our campuses in regard to sexual behaviour. And finally, during that year, also a very exciting development, I think, we established the South African Union of Students. This is a body that brings together the SRCs of all our universities. You would know, of course, we've historically had a problem about who talks on behalf of students. We have different organizations politically affiliated who might speak for a park of students, here, there, whatever. We regard the SRT within the democratically elected structures of students on campuses, and therefore by bringing them together into this town community of students, we believe it's the most authentic student voice that crosses all sorts of boundaries, and certainly we talk to them in regard to everything to do with higher education. The system planning and monitoring branch is one of the cross-cutting branches. On the financial planning side, they revise the financing normal standards, the normal standards for school funding. There have been further developments around that, probably pick up, and of course the most important one is the no-fee school. It only kicked in at the beginning of this year, but it was based on the provision that was done in that period. We also looked at the legislation that was needed to introduce the no-fee schools. As I said earlier, we've got ECD funding norms with the Minister of Finance, FET funding norms we have already legislated on, and ABET norms also have been promulgated. One of the very important developments, and I'm sure given the context we're in now of infrastructure issues, we launched in that period the National Education Infrastructure Management System, NEEMS, which we care a lot. This will replace the old school register of needs, which was a manual audit done on a periodic basis to see whether we were improving. This is now an electronic information system, so every school has been electronically captured, photographs of the school, full site plan, any other details we need, etc. And this will give us on a real-time basis an opportunity to look at any school in the country and immediately be able to call up the circumstances, find out what's there, and hopefully through that process to be able to much more specifically target what needs to be done in terms of infrastructure and where we need to go. This could then be updated on a regular basis. If the province builds a new classroom at a certain school, straight away that information comes to us, the electronic record is updated, we know exactly where we are. This is due to be finished, in fact, in March this year. At that stage, we'd only done 9,000 schools, but virtually all of them have been completed now. And by July, we should that should be a public access information database. And then the further support to FET in this respect. Human resource planning issues. There was quite an exciting move around teacher salaries, around career path opportunities, what we termed accelerated progression. So that performance, teachers who were in fact performing well could not only continue to get notch increases but could get it on an accelerated basis and actually go far higher than we had placed limits before. It's about 20% higher than the previous maximum. An ordinary teacher can now really progress very well up the ladder within the classroom. The accelerated progression, as I say, for teachers who consistently perform at the level of good, you have to get 3 goods in a row on your performance evaluation, and at that stage you then qualify for a sort of leap in terms of the notches, a very exciting one. And we've also improved the school grading norms. It's benefited, again, our good principals, good meaning you've been able to attract learners into your school. If you get more learners, your school grading goes up, your salary goes up as a principal. So some exciting developments there. We signed during this year, under review, finally an agreement on the integrated quality management system. And that includes both your therapists, your psychologists, your FET colleges, etc. The career path signed as well, and the salary progression one. So those are pretty well stories now. IQMS was not an easy process to implement, and we've had to remind people that, you know, for some 50 years we have had no effective inspectorate in our schools. It was in the 1970s that certain people probably around the table chased some questions out of our schools. It's taken that long for us to get them back into schools now. So, you know, people who were looking to IQMS to make all the difference in 1 year, I think we shouldn't expect that. This is something that over time will develop, but broadly it has introduced the notion of public accountability into the work of teachers, and that's a huge step forward, obviously. legislation we amended during the year. You were involved in that chair's committee. This provided for a declaration of our no fee schools and also gave school body, governing bodies, the power to immediately suspend a learner who was clearly a problem in the school. Historically, they had to wait for the agreement of the HOD, but there are some instances where kids are just being damaged in school. They're dangerous, they're a threat to other learners, and what we said is, in that case, no question, a school can suspend that learner for at least a week. In that time, you can get the agreement of the HOD, etc., but take that problem child out of the situation immediately, and governing bodies, I think, welcome that and obviously as well. We also strengthened the regulations around fee exemption. This was the issue that went to court earlier this year. Some schools took us to court on it, and we won the case, so those new regulations are in place. We also defended a number of issues around, let's be reminded what the first one was. I'm not entirely sure, Community versus Minister of Education, section 14 of the EA, right, to check on that one. The second bullet is a very interesting one. This, of course, was a bursary fund administered by the Cyprus Trust, and it advertised bursaries for UGT in particular. Could only be offered, and I recall it, to something like Caucasian males or something like that. We took the case to the court to say this was discriminatory. It's a very important one because a lot of people held that a person's will is sacrosanct, and what they put in their will, in their estate, is not something you can tamper with. And if they want to give it to, you know, one-legged children, well, that's their choice. They can give it to one-legged children. However, the court did agree with us. In this case, there was no basis for protecting that kind of will and testament that might have been made long ago, and they agreed with us that in this case, certainly these were discriminatory, that could be changed. It has enormous implications for a whole range of other bursaries. You would have all seen bursaries advertised available to people of Jewish origin or people of this origin or that, and it affects all of these now, unless there's some strong rational basis for them, would be told unacceptable. And as I say, the RQMX, so we had a bit of a dispute, but that got managed. That's automatic expulsion. Now, that's always been the case. I'm not sure it's always as strictly applied as it should, but that one is certainly one we just push. We convened in July 2005 a 10-year review conference. We got strong representation from both government, civil society, teacher unions, etc. There was a good assessment, I think, of progress and absences in that area, and it certainly has helped us, I think, in our planning process to decide where we need to go for the next decade. I'm not sure there was anything new in it. I think many people would have agreed before they came to the conference on some of these areas, but it was good, I think, to build that consensus and coherence around what the agenda was certainly for the next decade. Quality promotion. Works in a number of areas. One is the equity issue. During that year, the Minister had established a Ministerial Committee on Gender Equity. They reported in that period, and we're still working with the recommendations around that. Broadly, we have achieved the Education for All Goal 5 on gender equity. Our gender parity index is 1.0. In fact, if anything since then has crept up a bit, we have, for example, more girls than boys writing the trip, more girls than boys finishing school, etc. Those are concerns for us that we'll continue to work on. They have established the GEM Club, the Girls Education Movement, which, by the way, doesn't only include girls, boys can join these GEM Clubs as well. We celebrated the 50 years of the Freedom Charter, attending resource packages to every school. We're still trying to push this flag in every school project, asking culture and funding for it, but what I want to invite that honourable members, if ever they get to a school, and there's not a flagpole and a flag flying outside the school, you need to ask the school why. If they haven't got a flag in the flagpole, please get hold of us, we've got the money, we will make sure we get one there. But the point when it is there, we want to see the schools raising it every day, national anthem, those sort of things. It's really something that we should expect to work with. So we encourage you to look at that. And then we also managed to sponsor some 600 district and provincial officials on this advanced certificate also, but in this case on race and values. some very good thinking that came up with that. They also work in the area of health in education. They've launched in that time a school health project in Eastern Cape, working with the Department of Health, just looking at eyes, ears, teeth, the simple things. This is not complicated. A child is sitting in the front of the class squinting like this. You know there's something wrong. What is the problem? Get glasses. That child can make a world of difference to their lives. Hard of hearing, very easy to pick up, a few simple tests, those sort of things. Deworming as a natural thing that we need to do with all children, ongoing campaigns with the Department of Health. The HSRC study on the state of our educators was published in that year, and in response to that we developed a health and wellness program for educators. I'm not sure they're all following it, but we need to push them in that one. The HIVNA's life skills program is continuing in our schools, part of the curriculum process. And the National School Nutrition Program. I know there's been some bad publicity recently around the Eastern Cape, but overall, we cannot underestimate the impact. This is now, at that stage, with 4.9 million learners, well over 5 million learners at the moment. It's still around the 13,000 schools, I think. Wonderful job creation, mostly elderly women in communities who are now coming in, doing the cooking and preparing of food, etc. We've got some 3,000 food gardens across the country, and I was in the Eastern Cape, in fact, yesterday, where we visited one of the schools, and the teacher said they felt so bad because they'd gone into the staff room with their lunchbox, and the little kids had actually come to the door of the staff room saying, "But man, where's our bread today?" The feeding scheme, of course, in the Eastern Cape had been delayed in January. They tell me that it was reactivated as from yesterday, but it just impresses on you the importance of this thing. It's around school attendance, it's around school performance, it affects all of those kind of things. And while we still can't claim, I think in many cases, that it is really a nutrition program, even the school feeding, a bit of bread, a bit of jam, a bit of juice, something like that, just makes a world of difference to many, many learners in our country. So that's something we really want to push. There's been suggestions we need to look at even opening it up into secondary school, certainly probably until the age of compulsory schooling for teens, we should be offering. It's very difficult when a younger child in grade 7 gets school feeding, and yet the one in grade 8 doesn't get school feeding. They come from an equally poor home. How can you say, no, you don't get food anymore, you younger brother? What tends to happen is that the younger kids then actually have to put half their lunch in their back pocket and actually take it home for the rest of the set of children in the family. Now, we've got to push that. So this is a scheme that we really want to build on. Then also, this grant work on social inclusion. Minister had a committee on literacy. It reported after its visits to Cuba, Venezuela, and New Zealand. At that stage, the recommendations were to be taken to Cabinet. I'm happy to say that Cabinet has now approved those recommendations. We're working on an implementation for that, and I would hope that by early next year, we will have a national literacy campaign that will start to address our Millennium Development Goals of Harvard Literacy by 2040. We've got to accomplish that. We're involved, obviously, in regard to ESISA, in re-looking at the ABET curriculum, but I'm glad to say that under the Public Works Program, we've got about 17,000 ABET facilitators who've been newly appointed to train people who have been appointed on the Public Works Program. We've got about 30,000 learners also under the EPWP in literacy programs. And I think something people don't always appreciate, nearly 250,000 adult learners are enrolled in our public adult learning centres, some 3,000 of them across the country. So it's quite a silent part of the system, one that we don't hear about, but we shouldn't assume that nothing is happening in that area. And then I think finally on the quality promotion side, there has been work done between ourselves and Sport and Recreation South Africa, a protocol for the management and organisation of school sport. It's been signed off between the two ministers, and then various events we have. One of the more exciting that if any of you get the chance to attend are the farm and rural school games. These are kids from farm schools, from rural schools, very often haven't even been out of that local area. They come together to a national event. It's not a serious sport. It's not about winning and losing. It's about being there and participating. And there's enormous, I think, fun and growth had by all of them. We always have, of course, each year the music at Chester's around July each year. Some wonderful music produced there. Last year particularly, we had a language festival in celebration of that. We also have the Indigenous Music Movements and Games Festival. This is where we don't do the ordinary athletics or whatever. We go back into some of the more traditional games that have been played in our country for many years. And then last year in particular, we also had the National Girls Games where girls could just be themselves and enjoy. So that was happening. Interesting, at that stage we were simply looking at partnerships to address school safety and drug abuse. Since then this issue has become much more pronounced on the agenda. Late last year we had some programs have developed out of that. And then to turn to our administration branch, but one of the areas they work in is international relations. And one thing I think we can say is that certainly we are continuing to build our relations with the rest of Africa as well as South Cooperation. We attended the 53rd UNESCO General Conference in Paris. I'm happy to say that South Africa put forward a candidate as an executive member of the UNESCO board, Professor Brian Fagagi, I'm sure well known. He was elected to that position, so it's useful for us to have there. Some other little interesting bits, the University of Stellenbosch has now established a Center for Chinese Studies, given the presence of the President of China in the country at the moment, not insignificant. And then of course we continue to work on the IFSA program in South Africa. Climate chair on the finances, not insignificant, but hopefully not the only focus here. In terms of our expenditure outcomes, we spent about 98.5% of our budget. The total underspending is a lot of money, although in percentage terms relatively small, 193. But a large proportion of that, 157 million, was in fact on the university merger expenses, where we are in fact having to wait for universities to claim those costs from us. So Treasury agreed that they would roll over those amounts of 157 million. So technically the underspend in fact was the 33 million, the 0.3% of our total budget ignoring that rollover. So 157 there rolled over, another 12 million rolled over on operational expenses that in fact left us only with 23 million underspend on a budget of some 14 billion rand. I think a very small fraction and as close as one can get to complete spending. We were happy to receive an unqualified audit report and thanks to the CFO for assisting on that one. There were two emphases of matter which were raised. One is that in relation to conditional grants, under DORA, we expect to report to us by the 15th of each month on spending on their conditional grants. Sometimes provinces don't report to us by the 15th. Now we write to them, we phone them, we do whatever we can to try and get these reports, but in the end, if they don't come, they don't come. Of course, we're the ones who then get nailed by the Auditor General for something that promises they get to do, but that's the nature of our system. We accept it and we're trying to fix it up. And the other was in regard to our asset register. The Auditor General picked up that we have some intangible assets. We have developed, for example, some computer software around various issues. We've produced various books and various other materials that we own copyright to. And we haven't reflected those assets of the department. So they're not financial in that sense, they're intangible, but we do need to record them and we accept that. So I think we're just reminding them to see what's right there. The next slide is just data on the spending on the school nutrition program, 91.4% for the year. The HIV and AIDS life skills program looks a bit odd, 120% spending. How this comes about is that probably can top up this conditional grant. So you'll see the additional 27 million spent there is in fact what provinces themselves have chipped into this particular program. So the conditional grant will be spent and more. Chair, I think we can just conclude with the Commission, Human Rights Commission. During the course of that year, we did have hearings on the right to education, and the conclusion they reached is that according to Section 29.1 of the Constitution, can be concluded that reasonable measures have been taken to make education progressively available and accessible. However, despite progress achieved, a lot still needs to be done. I don't know if we could put it in. Thank you, Chair. I hope we've captured the technical.
Thank you very much, DG. I think you found a way I didn't have the time. We have got more than an hour or so. So I can interact with that with you, your patient, elaborate on this program, and what you have done as a department, during the year under review. Thank you very much. Honourable members, without much ado, I am going to allow you an opportunity to interact with the report as presented by the Secretary General. The ball is now in your court. Honourable Suleiman.
Thank you, Chairperson. Now, Chairperson, just to say that on the spending factors of the department, that it is indeed true that percentage-wise, underspending is minimal, but in actual money, monetary terms, it's a lot of money. What I would like to know from the department is that have they put some mechanisms in place to see if they can perhaps shrink the underspending perhaps in the new financial year? And then secondly, can I bring a second one, Chief?
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Ask all the questions, Honorable Zuli.
I've got 100, Chief.
No, seven.
I wish I deal with the first two.
Okay. But there's no 7 points.
Chief, I know for a fact that educators are complaining that they're having additional administrative work to do. It's a bit of a concern and a problem. I pick it up all over the show. I just want to know from the department, are they working on this particular matter, and when can we expect results as far as that is concerned? Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to share with the department, with our service provider, those who are delivering goods at school, the delay. Every year there's a delay. Whether do they have the capacity to do the because I think this is a serious problem. Since we are dealing with our SMEs, are they capacitated? The second one, the ECD open. In my constituency, most of the grades 0 to 10 grade are they've been taken to primary school where they've been qualified teachers with the grade R and principals. Now they've been told and taken to the primary school. Now the educators and the principal, it means there's no job for them, it's a problem. So if they can be told about the program implementation from the grade R to the primary school. The last one, Chair, is the national flag. This is a very good program. But I heard the people say they've got money. You must say these schools need those flags. But outside of the program is a Northwest where it was a speaker program where they gave members of the legislature 10 flags each. And we were having the program of adopt a school and donate a flag. Every that campaign ran so well, each school in the network is aiming to have the flag. Because members could adopt one in two schools, one in the rural, one in the township of the school that you started, the first area of those areas when you started school. That's the school. Also, if you want to be a member of the school, then you also to donate another mindset to other schools. Because I think it's going to be a problem when you identify the school and you have to check with the national school. We have to follow this thing in my constituency. If maybe can be, the flag can be given to the members of parliament and the legislature. Be the one who donate those flags. Make a report to the speaker for the question.
Thank you. Any further questions? Honorable Lamula.
Now, I question the part of the understanding, and I think my procedures probably covered that. So I'll help you achieve my second question is on special needs and inclusive education. Now, I'm the last little thing to know, I'm going to be any time that I'm going to be a new problem. So the NEC wasn't even aware of the curriculum for the special needs as the rules that they use. I'd like to know when one of the things and how well it was monitored, and she said, and then for her to her mother, she was monitored, and she said, and when teachers have problems, our department is there, anything is there, and everything is cooled down. Nobody attends to these problems. That's not the reason why we have the problems of the medical restriction of schools under the bed, where they do have these problems and nobody assists them. Only problem when the problem really comes to mind. The other one was on the catalog of the ingredient cases. I'm grateful that the department has now come up with this catalog. So now we will have uniformity in our school. Everybody will need to know what she uses for subjects. But are those schools be allowed to supervise from the supplier of their shop? Or will that also be determined by the government if they need to buy from
Thank you.
I want to know about what she spoke about the revision on the legislation on no school fees, no school fees. But how soon is that legislation coming? There's a confusion in the schools, you know? The regions have fully discovered that the schools are not happy. Not all the schools are happy on that, because some were claiming that there are no kids who cannot afford, but they are compulsory for them to pay school fees. Some of them were saying that they qualify, but they don't qualify. So I want to know when that situation is coming. My question is that when was the collective agreement on schools? I don't think it's a good principle. You know, when you visit a school, you discover that there are a lot of teachers have capacitated teachers. What is the department planning to do about such principles? Because we found that the principles were not good enough, and when you check, when you assess as a politician, you discover that the principal in that school is so hopeless, so useless, but nothing is done. What are they intending to do? And my last question is partly covered by Neba Masula on the flags, you know. The first part is you want flags, especially in my area, school dish and